You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
So, yeah, this past weekend I was just at a convention, and I did my webcomics panel, I did my podcasting panel, and I also did a couple of panels on fanon and shipping and cross-gendering and such. And overall, it went really well. It was a really good weekend.
What was the con?
Anime Minneapolis.
Okay, cool.
Which is a local con here.
Okay. I escaped having to be sent to a convention in Minnesota, thankfully.
Oh, come on. Which convention was it that you escaped from?
They have mosquitoes there.
High tech.
I never heard of that one.
It's not a comic convention or anything that's interesting. It's about hospitality.
Yay! Dude, you missed out. There would have been totally a lot of drinking and sex at that thing. Hospitality.
Nah.
Come on. That's what business conventions are about. They're about drinking and having sex.
Welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. Rolling right along. this is the newscast for Sunday, June 30th, 2013. This week, we have returning Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Good to be back.
Kitty Hawk from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki.
Thanks for having me. SGBY.com. Sexy fun.
And Monty Rode. And I'm sorry, I forget your URL because I haven't solidified it yet.
The cartoonist, the web cartoonist without a website. Vegetables for desserts.
What?
It's out there.
How did you... Are you like a wizard?
Yes. I'm a wizard who uses a combination of Tumblr and DeviantArt.
Oh, well, then you have a website.
You have a website, but you don't have a domain name, which you should get on that.
Well, but like he has a Tumblr. Go ahead and say your Tumblr, man.
Oh, yeah. The Tumblr's just vegetables for dessert.
Vegetablesfordessert.tumblr.com.
Yes. Dark humor to warm your cold black heart.
Hooray!
Oh, so warm.
Let's take a look at what we got here. Well, if you haven't heard it already, our parts 1 and 2, where we talk about strip search, are already online. As well as I had an interview with Abby Howard, so that's really good.
Cool.
I'm trying to schedule something up with Maki. So more on that later. Not sure if things will line up yet, but I'm going to see if we can.
Ask him about the pineapple.
Duh. Of course I'm going to ask him about pineapple Maki. But this week is, we're going to take a look at a few bits of news. It's been pretty busy here. Been at a convention, and summer's kind of a crazy time for dealing with a lot of this stuff anyway. But we're going to see what we got here. First on the docket is, it's not webcomics, but the independent small publisher Antarctic Press basically appeals to crowdsourcing and crowdfunding in order to save itself. Antarctic Press is probably most famous for Gold Digger and Ninja High School, and I think there's another one as well.
Yes, we are going to have Fred Perry on in the next couple of weeks.
On your podcast. Holy Jesus fuck.
Actually, Kitty Hawk, thank some of the people in your chat room because they're the ones that came to him during a live stream he was drawing and said, hey.
Oh, man, that's excellent. Yeah, I'm gonna totally thank them because that's excellent.
And let's see here. This is essentially what happened with Antarctic Press. You know, the traditional sort of comic publishers, you go through Diamond and you put your comics in comic book stores, but Antarctic Press tried to get into retail with like Walmart and I think some other retail stores as well. Completely backfired because they underestimated the amount of returns that they were going to get and basically left them, they say, with $70,000 in debt from those costs and returns alone. So they basically started an Indiegogo campaign There's about, as of this podcast, there's 15 days left. They had a 3,000 goal to actually try to pay off some of their smaller loans first. They're up to 8,000 now. So, I mean, there's definitely people that want to get back on this. And this is pretty interesting. Some of the rewards are pretty kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. The rewards are definitely awesome.
Like, you can become an assistant editor.
I know. Like, that's pretty excellent. Well, I mean, I'm also looking at, like, the packs of comics and...
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping the shipping isn't that much, because, you know, Australia.
I think a lot of these are digital, though, too. Digital offers.
Oh, well,
then I'll
definitely be doing this, then.
Okay. Assistant editor, you can make suggestions. We may actually use them. I was kind of wondering what you said about that when they said assistant editor, because it's like, do you want people really touching your creator stuff?
Well, this is
true, but you get to talk on Skype with them, which I think is the
Well, there's two of them. There's the AP assistant editor. So you're an assistant editor. Become an Antarctic Press assistant editor for a month. Be involved in the process. You get sent PDFs of all the Antarctic Press books coming out that month before they go to press. You can make suggestions, and they might actually use them if you spot an editorial goof and et cetera, that sort of thing. Down at the 250 level, an associate editor for Fred, one of the selectors out of 20, select associate editors for Fred Perry, get the perk of an assistant editor. Plus, you're on one of the associate editors for Fred, where you get to be on a 1-hour editorial meeting with Fred via group Skype and talk about that issue of Digger.
Yeah, that's pretty, I mean, this is a really good Kickstarter. I feel bad for them that they're having to do this. This seems to be a thing lately with people having to cover their court costs or debts with Indiegogo and Kickstarter. But I will say this about Walmart. They were really dumb to get involved with Walmart because here's the thing. If you ever really want to watch something fun, and I actually think this is fun, there are two really good documentaries on Walmart that were put out by CNBC a few years back, one right before the global financial crisis and one after the global financial crisis. And they basically talk about how Walmart will get you in. They'll say, we want this much. And then they just keep increasing the number of what they want. Like, okay, if you're making comic books, they may say initially, okay, let's say they say 100,000, print 100,000. Well, they keep creeping that up. And then they start saying, we want it at a lower price. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand why they took this deal, because Diamond does have a stranglehold over the print market. And they are attempting to try to do this with digital, though good luck. So they were really dumb to take this deal, but I understand why they took this deal. It was the whole, we're going to get from under this monopoly. Unfortunately, they didn't realize that the newsstands have gotten a lot different since like the 80s. Because, man, I remember when comic books used to be on like the shelves of like grocery stores and things like that before the crash.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, besides the corporate culture of Walmart, though, it's just the fact that if you walk through a Walmart and you look at the kind of entertainment goods they sell, I mean, what do they mostly sell in a Walmart? I mean,
they haven't sold comic books since like shit. I think it was the mid 90s or maybe the late 90s when they stopped selling them. And like I said, Walmart demands you to sell it at a very low price. And to produce a lot of them. And this is why you only see major publishers in Walmart.
Walmart's demanding it in high volume at low price. But also, if you just look at the content that's already in there, I mean, you have mass media release titles. You have, you know, the latest movies.
That's who's left.
What?
That's who's left, honestly. I mean, seriously. Think about print and like media in general, like in stores. It's only the big guys, really, because they won. They sealed up the market. They keep everyone else out. Yeah.
And so
I mean,
it's just not really viable if you just kind of look at, you know, what's already there. Why is it there? And I mean, you pretty much already described it. It's just, well, these are companies that are large enough and have that kind of leverage. And also, it's just the people that go into Walmart, this is content they've been exposed to for decades. So it's not like they're going to spontaneously warm up to, you know, new indie comics just cutting the shelves in a week. And
well, they were probably playing on the anime angle, because anime is pretty mainstream at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I think that this honestly was a last gasp sort of deal, in that they wanted to make their print side still work. But it's obvious that it's 2013. You don't see as many, like here in Australia, I say you see more print than you see in the United States, but that's because there's still public transportation here, which when you go to places with public transportation, you see a higher rate of like print readership. But you don't see as much print as you once did. And hell, even like going to like an office supply store, the printers are fucking cheap now. And they're like basic models. Like they're either, this is a photo printer or this is a black and white laser printer. But there's the dream of the photo laser printer, which, you know, there are a couple of laser printers that do approach that. They're not there anymore. Why? Because everybody's online. And frankly, the photo printers are so cheap now because grandma doesn't want to print out her photos anymore. She has them on her computer. I'm sorry, print is dead.
Egon Spengler, she has one of those digital picture frames at her.
Yeah, grandma would have that.
Grandma would definitely
go so far to say as print is dead, but rather print is now more or less its novelty.
Yeah, it's like when I was in university and I took a few bookmaking courses and it was fun. You know, I had fun making the books. And they were heavily recruiting. They were like trying desperately to get new people. And the reason that they were desperately trying to get new people is because no one binds books by hand anymore unless it's for fun. So, I mean, it's sad that, you know, like you can't go to a grocery store and there's like the big wall of comics anymore. But I like being able to wake up in the morning and click a button and I've got a lot of goddamn comics waiting for me.
I got all the latest updates just ready for me. That's the biggest thing is online comics should really transform a little bit more than where they are now. It's like, I look at it as halfway there. It is halfway there. The transition needs to be completed.
I would like a one site sort of deal, like a place that I can go to discover. Like there are a lot of good websites like that have like guides to good web comics, or like there's like these aggregate sites where they like list all the web comics and stuff. But I guess what I'm kind of looking for is like kind of like Manga Here, or
you're looking for discovery more than aggregation, because all those aggregators are vote based, not really discovery based.
I mean,
and that's the biggest problem. The whole thing that helps manga is manga's the new big thing. Well, not the new big thing.
Well, it's been the thing for the last world.
Yeah, yeah. It's a globalized thing where everyone who's between 12 to question mark wants to read more manga and actually are starting to get the acclimated to reading right to left now. It's a little weird, but it's true. And because of that, lots of people are working on discovery. I mean, here's this one country, well, three countries really, that produce these comics.
Well, actually, now it's like five, because if you go on Batoto now, they actually have Indonesian and Malaysian.
I have a story about a Malaysian artist, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Anyways, what's happening is there's so much discovery. So many people are not only looking at everything that's coming out in every weekly collection, every monthly collection. Mm. It's more than that. Everyone is looking at every one shot, every short story, everything going back.
All this doujinshi that I remember drooling about in like the 90s. Like I remember being like a kid, I can't afford it, or I couldn't buy it. And like I had no access to it. Like
Kenshin Saito, doujinshi.
Yeah. All that shit's getting translated now. So like all this rare doujinshi that I remember seeing, like there's like one or two scans from it, and you're like, oh my god, I'm looking at it. It's so great.
Actually, there's a funny story about that. I was actually able to get a super duper rare manga that this whole translate community wanted. because I found out that there was a service that lets you like ship to like a mailbox in Japan and then ships to you.
Oh, that's so right.
So I got like this 4-volume ultra rare manga and basically there was this whole translating community that wanted it. I'm like, well, tell me what you will do to help me get this out, because I'm not going to just give you Raws. Just if you want to help translate, fine. If you just want Raws, I'm not helping you. And I sort of held it over their heads for a couple months. And hey, I'm all for sharing it. I'm not just going to give Raws out.
Well, I mean, you're a good person to give the Raws out so you can get translated. And I mean,
there's a translator that wants to help, I'll give the translator the Raws. We'll get it out. But if you just want Raws just to gawk at the pictures, I'm not going to be.
Well, that's part of being a release group. But I have noticed, like, you know, manga is more international, like, because now some series that I read get translated into Portuguese or Spanish first, and then I have to wait for the English version. Though I've been sort of trying to muddle my way through the Spanish versions because
you can read Japanese though. Why can't you just
I can't read very good Japanese. Like I can, like, if I were like in a city, I could probably figure out how to do things, but like sitting down and actually reading, like I have to have help in order to do that. Like I used to translate, but I mean I haven't done that in years. So
just contact Gabby. She can translate for you.
Yeah, well, but I mean, not a lot of people translate, like the stuff I like is already being translated. So, yeah, by either companies or by scanlation groups. So I'm cool. But anyway, back to Antarctic.
Anyway, webcomics.
Yeah, webcomics, which, you know, I'm glad that like Antarctic Press is like, you know, fighting to stay alive. I really enjoyed reading their stuff back in the day in 7-Eleven. It's really sad that a lot of these companies are having to do these Kickstarters to either pay their debts or pay for legal battles in some cases. And I'm glad that there is a source in order to help them pay for this thing. But I'm kind of getting to the point with these Kickstarters, like maybe instead of calling them like Kickstarters or things like that, we should just call it salary and just like pay people a salary to do something, like a website called salary.com.
Yeah.
We crowdsource your salary.
Well, unfortunately, there's more excitement about the launch of a new project rather than just, you know, it's like, well, if you keep giving me money, I'll keep creating.
I'll give you a plushie. Give me money. Except yeah, people.
Or you could just beg for money and put a donation button up.
Well, or sell wallpapers or sell like high resolution images that people can print off themselves. Something like that.
Who's gonna do that?
I don't know. Some people
do this already.
Yeah, some people do that already. Is what I'm saying. You know, like $2 wallpapers or high res art, which essentially is a wallpaper, but it's not. It's vertical or whatever. You know, people do that, and that's fine. But I can totally see like a fundraiser drive where
that actually would be better. And like I've done some drives, and they work out really well. The issue, yeah,
that's how I got the Cintiq.
Yeah, actually, that's how I got my Cintiq, and I ran it all by myself. Like, I understand that Kickstarter gets you all this, like, you know, helps you manage shit and blah, 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 blah. And it also seems a little more exciting because it's on a website. But you can actually, like, raise money by yourself. It just seems that I would really like it if Kickstarter would go back to what it was originally about funding projects rather than, please help me pay for my some bills. Shit. Yeah, yeah, which
I need I need you guys to pay my bills. Yeah, it's
but here,
the biggest thing is Kickstarter used to be in its creation about moonshots.
Yeah, and now it seems to be that, you know, and now
it's people saying I need you guys to pay my bills. And a good example of a moonshot is Kitty. Can you explain moonshot to the listening audience, please?
The moonshot, like in that, like you're paying for like to go to the moon, like in that sense. Like,
it's a moonshot project is a long shot that is high concept. It is high concept, but if it works, the yeah. payoff for not just the person involved, but for the human condition. And I know this kind of sounds a little corny, but
So what you're talking about is investment, like the old school way of like, I have this like, yeah, yeah. And like, that's the thing. Like I have plans to build this thing and all I need is funding. Kind of like with my Comitocracy thing.
Yes, exactly.
If I had had the funding for it, mm-hmm. I probably would have been able to ship it.
Exactly. And like I said,
but I did.
Kickstarter started as an angel investments for moonshot mm-hmm. projects and quickly devolved into a bunch of guys that are saying, I need you guys to pay my bills.
I think you're oversimplifying things.
I think we are oversimplifying, but I think that there is an element of truth going on.
Is the thing, Ben. It's like, I totally understand what you're saying, and that's a good thing that Kickstarter was doing, and I understand that what it's become now, and it would be nice if there was an alternative to Kickstarter and thus an alternative to PayPal, because the reason why a lot of people are going to Indiegogo and Kickstarter is because PayPal will screw you on various ways that you try to fundraise on your own site. They'll hold your funds because they will do that, but if you get
the money out as quick as possible.
Well, it's like when you're doing donations, technically you can't do donations unless you never say it's for porn.
Once you say it's for porn, they'll grab your money.
No, dude, Ben. Let me finish, please.
Okay, and I'll say my thing. Yeah,
it's because it's like you can't sign up for like a donation thing unless you're like a nonprofit sort of thing. And once you start, you can't do quote unquote donations or pre-orders because of the time limit that's in place for that. There's nothing. Kickstarter is where people go to because they can do that sort of pre-order sort of step. And I also like and appreciate that it's more the all or nothing aspect of it, because it's like, I think that whether or not Kickstarter is the proper place for doing the pre-order sort of things or an investment of the ongoing series, like a lot of people are doing it. I think that's something that a lot of people still want. And because people are still paying for it and they want to do that, that's what they're doing. All right. I'm done.
Okay. Here's my thing. You talk about like that PayPal, you know, okay. For one thing, we're all breaking a term of service right now. We're on yes, Skype and talking. So we're breaking a term of service.
This is actually
a felony in the United States of America to break a terms of service. Thanks for the laws back in the 80s, Reagan. But anyway,
Reaganomics.
Yeah, that was great. So the thing is that you're saying that Kickstarter is the way to do this because you can avoid PayPal, except that a lot of these do dump the money back into PayPal afterwards. There's also another thing. They charge 5% if you reach your goal. Now, you can get a credit card processor like Square, and they charge you 3.2% on transactions. So there's no reason for you to use Kickstarter if you're able to take credit card transactions.
That is true. However, I have a question about this. Is it just 5% off the goal or 5% off the pot? Because
it's 5% off the pot. It's 10%. It's like it's different in each one of them. But if I remember correctly, it's like you take 10 or 9% if you don't reach the goal, and it's 5% if you do reach the goal.
That's for Indiegogo, though.
Okay, well, and then Kickstarter, I think, is 5%. Still,
is it off the goal amount or the pot amount? Like, let's say
whole amount.
Okay, whole amount. That's what I thought because at first it sounded like a good idea if it's only 10% off the goal. Yeah. Because if you're raising 10, you get 30, then they're only going to take 10% off of.
But 10? that would lead everyone to doing low goals then. And that's why they set it so that the whole pot. So my point is that if you are looking to make money, if you are looking to take in money and you're not really looking into this, like I'm actually funding a project or something like that. Honestly, there are avenues in order for you to take credit cards. Now, I wish there was another method other than taking credit cards or taking PayPal.
Yeah,
I really wish, honestly, I'm going to say this and it's going to sound crazy, but it's true. I wish Bitcoin would get more popular and more accessible, the big key being accessible, because it honestly would be the way to get out of this bullshit we have to deal with like credit card companies and such like that. Exchange rates are fucking killing me. I mean, it's crap that we have multiple currencies at this point. It's just arbitrage. It's just bullshit.
I think that's a completely different discussion. I do like using Square and such, but the problem is you can't do a web sort of thing. You can't just ask your webcomic fans to give you your credit card number so you can run it.
I've done that.
If you really can't do that on a large scale.
It's not hard. You can set up a fucking website to take the credit card numbers if you're not there are actual services out there that will help you set that up.
Through Square?
I'm actually sure
Kitty, I know you, but I don't know you enough to just give you my number, of which you have direct access to, versus like an encrypted thing.
But it's not coming directly to me. It will be going through Square. You will be probably you can set it up to go through the Square website.
Would you feel better if you see the McAfee VeriSign symbol?
Not McAfee. No,
you would not be
not McAfee. Because, no,
why? Because
fuck McAfee.
Because they work for the government, dude.
No, just screw McAfee. I don't care about that piece of crap.
You don't care about John McAfee, the murderer who escaped from Central America.
No, I'm not going to trust that.
God damn.
So anyway,
sorry.
No, but it's like the individual person. I do not want to have my number, but like Square or PayPal or Amazon, that's fine because they are very well, regulated, and
there they are.
Dude.
Versus an individual.
You could actually just do things through Amazon as well. So it's like there are many other avenues. They may not be as easy as Kickstarter, but there are other ways to
easy for the user.
You can't accept payments through Amazon. Amazon does have a payment system like that.
And don't go through Google because they don't process your credit card anymore.
Okay. Well,
if you really feel insecure about it, just pick up a prepaid card and just
I'm talking about so what about say if you go through Amazon payments or something like that, it's like versus PayPal, particularly if you want to do a pre-order, because whenever you go through PayPal, technically whatever they buy has to be shipped to them within I think 90 days. Or they can say they never got anything and then you get tagged for it. It's in the terms.
Amazon. I bought digital books off of Amazon payment. That Amazon didn't even handle the digital books. The actual seller sent me the book a day later.
No. I'm talking about PayPal. It's like that's why I'm saying why you can't use PayPal for pre-orders technically. Because
if you read the terms of service, you can't use PayPal at all. If you read the term of service, it's really basically, fuck you, we can do whatever the fuck we want. So seriously, talking about pre-orders or donations, money, they're all against the terms of service. You just committed a felony. Sorry.
But no, the point was...
It's also illegal to carry wire cutters around in Texas.
It is!
And wear a hat on Sunday.
What the hell is wrong with Texas?
Every state has rules like that. Fess, in Minnesota, it's illegal to eat ice cream on Sunday.
What?
Yes.
Oh man, the Jughead's crazy laws thing. I used to love that thing.
Yes. So did you have an interesting surprise? Every state has weird laws, Fess.
Yeah, but they're not enforced.
If you piss off a cop, he will find 10 things wrong with your car.
Oh, well, all he has to say is you were being belligerent towards the officer, and then he can arrest you. I mean,
they can also say you were swerving in your own lane. That's a violation. Yeah,
so basically what we're trying to get to it here is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't if you use PayPal. And honestly, that's honestly true for any payment service, even a bank. Banks can basically close your account at any goddamn time they feel like it. And then you can't do anything because your fucking money's still in there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, that's why you get gold bars and put them under your bed.
No, that's why you move out of the United States and
right next to a nice 45. That way, that's your bank security and that's your bank right now.
Dude, move to Australia. The food's better. They have banking laws.
Yeah, and everything.
They don't allow violent video games.
And everything there can kill you. Every little creature that can kill you, an insect and snake and everything can kill you. All right, and we're gonna take a break. We'll be right back.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Well, that was fun, Kitty Hawk.
Yep.
That was actually really fun. I love the part where you said Fest was outright wrong.
Oh, it's just that we're having a good time. We're having a debate.
We're having a good time. I sang that at karaoke at the convention I was at. I did my damned best, is what happened, and it was.
You have a voice for Print Fest. Oh, God. Slow.
That is so nice of you.
200 degrees! That's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit!
I'm a tavern at the speed of light! I'm gonna make a supersonic man out of you!
Don't stop me now! I'm gonna have a good time!
Because I'm having a good time!
Don't stop me now! You got to remember that this that whole best of that whole Best of Queen album is why I sing when I play in Team Fortress 2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you're not good enough that you have to resort to bad-mouthing people.
I always get MVP. I always own at least 4 people. You know, I got the dominations. I got everything, and I always play as my weakest class.
Yeah, sure, Ben. We all know you're a Mary Sue. So, all right. Moving on. All right. So there's another Kickstarter out there. There is another. Yes. Brad Geiger of Evil Inc. and of the Half Pixel Group is putting
together...
Does
he count things?
What?
That was a joke, Fess.
Anyway, he is essentially making a sequel to the How to Make Webcomics book. And this one's called The Webcomics Handbook. And this is just him putting this together. And it's already reached its goal almost twofold. And I don't know. What do some of you guys think about this? Let's start. Like, who here has actually read How to Make Webcomics?
I have.
I have not. Yeah. I have not, because I pretty much found that everything I needed to know I was already told, or I figured it out on my own, and or was a mix of common sense and good marketing skills.
Mm-hmm. I only read it because I wanted to see exactly what they were putting in there. And I remember the first book was actually pretty informative about programs and such like that, though some of the information was outdated by the time it was printed, which was
guys, yeah. I see a Photoshop 8 screenshot here.
Yeah, then the thing is that the reason I put this up for discussion this week is, like, this is part of my whole, why are you putting your book on Kickstarter?
Paper.
And it's not just paper. It's called print on demand.
The big thing that strikes me is the pace that they're showing on this Kickstarter says setting up Bleed in InDesign. And number one, this is how to set up a web comic. Why Bleed is something that printers have to deal with.
So I was going to get to that, but the issue I have with this is that, one, all of this information is available already online on webcomics.com. I understand that maybe some people want something that they can, like, spread out mm-hmm. and look at, but this is a paperback. And you can't really do that unless you break the spine on it. So my issue with this, like doing these sort of things is, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this when you could do print on demand? And I don't think you need to be paid to use InDesign, or you need to to edit this.
Print on demand has a terrible profit margin. And if you wanted to keep a profit margin, the book would be grandly expensive.
Why should he print these? Why should he print these up? Like, the issue I have here is that, one, this is already available online.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that I understand that the margins on like print on demand are worse. Okay.
You want to know the answer?
Well, he'll be selling them through his site, and also part of it's going to be impulse buys when he's at conventions too.
Yeah. He's just trying to make a buck, and there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. But
people do this all the time.
If you want to do this, you can do what I know people do. I know people who sell print on demand books at conventions. Okay, what they do is they buy a few books, they take it to the convention, and they sell it there. And the reason that they do this is so that they then don't have to have the massive amount of books sitting around being a drain. The thing is that, yes, the profit margin on a print run books is more. However, to do that, you have to do a decent enough run to make it profitable. And I guarantee that he has reached his goal. He will pay for these books.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that all this extra shit that he has to do is going to cost money. It's not let's see here. Like, when you're doing usually these books, you like offer things like extra tchotchkes, or sometimes people give away bookmarks or t-shirts or something like that.
Yeah, that's all
that
factored
all costs
in.
Money too.
That's all factored in.
I understand it's all factored in. Do a print on demand.
Why?
Seriously. And then all
why?
You have to
really?
Do is
why?
Just sit back if, and the money, com- no, the money if comes he, to you. You if, don't have to ship it.
Okay,
well,
hardly
you're
any
on
money.
Demand, though, I mean, that's for smaller volume work, but he's probably going to be selling stuff in larger volumes than most artists.
Yeah, no, he's not.
Honestly, is this. Okay, honestly, the thing is that print on demand at this point, telling me that it won't reach as many people is utter bullshit. Amazon does print on demand. Amazon does Kindle. I don't understand why you have to print your book these days. My issue is that why are you printing it? And the only reason that you're printing it is because you think you're going to get a bigger profit margin. But you have to also think of this. How long is it going to take you to actually make that money?
Yeah, like, the biggest thing is it's old school thinking of, I'm going to print 5,000 books right now. And if I print 5,000 books right now, the printer will give me a 35% discount because I am printing them right now. The plates are going to be used just once, blah, blah, blah. And the problem with that thinking is that's old school thinking. That's back when bookstores were the only vector for books.
Yep.
It is old school, old fashioned thinking. Now, I say this as someone who has worked in print shops. I've said someone who has had to burn plates before. I have experience in this.
Yeah. And it's
old fashioned thinking. And in the end, you have to store the inventory because you're buying them from the printer.
Right.
The printer isn't working for you anywhere farther beyond here it is. It's
okay. I've got another thing.
Let me finish, Kitty Hawk. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's cool.
And then it's all about sitting on these books waiting for the next thing to happen to where all of a sudden people buy all these books in a hurry. And as someone who has actually worked in a bookstore, that doesn't really happen. Let me give a good example about this. With a bookstore, this is, you know, the old fashioned thinking with bookstores is all these publishers like Penguin and etc., they print tons of books. And then they put them all in a warehouse, and then the bookstores get them all stocked up, and then they wait for a traditional book promoting vector to say, here, this is the book you have to read, like the New York Times bestsellers list, which is a piece of shit.
Yeah, everything's Oprah a New York Times bestseller.
Or Oprah Winfrey says, this is my book of the month, and everyone has to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an even bigger piece of shit because it's about this guy saying he was on drugs, and it turns out he never was.
Yeah, you're picking one thing. Okay.
And
yeah. Let me say this about this. The thing about, like, the reason I'm so pro print on demand is one of the issues about printing all these books is also shipping. Like, you have to handle the shipping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to have to go down to the post office and DIY. You're going to have to ship those goddamn books. Or you have to set up something where they come by your house and they pick it up. But you still have to get all those orders ready. And that's time.
There's a whole word for that in the industry. It's called fulfillment.
Yeah, fulfillment. And the thing is that I have known people who have had to dedicate an entire day of the week just to shipping things because it's just they have to handle it all by themselves. And that's ridiculous. Why would you do that to yourself when you could just plop that thing on Amazon? If someone wants a print version, they buy the print version. If they want the Kindle version, they get the Kindle version. And let me be honest, I would rather have the Kindle version because I can search through it.
It's on the multiple devices.
Well, the big issue about this is this makes no sense. If I go to webcomics.com, I can search for the term I want and I can find the particular tutorial I'm looking for. This is a book.
If you're subscribed.
But what I'm saying is that online, if I go to a tutorial, if I want to find the particular thing I want to do, like let's say in Manga Studio, I want to know how to make a text balloon. I can go to the PDF for that and search for text balloon. It will take me to that. I can't do that with a book. Book just sits there. I have to either go to the table of contents or the index and try to find it and then try to find the page and then try to find that particular paragraph that I'm looking for rather than hit Command F, I find it. I mean, and that's why I guess it's another issue I have with printing this out. This is clearly a money grab, and that's okay. If you really need some money, I'm okay with that. But at the same time, I'm going to say, please, everyone, it's called print on demand, it's called Kindle, it's called PDF, it's called the internet.
For fuck's let's sake, stop, you can Lulu this shit.
Yeah, don't use let's Lulu.
Stop,
don't
let's stop yeah. mowing down trees so that we can have something in our hands when we already have it in our hands.
All right, let's get Monty in here. I think he's been waiting for a while.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
Well, okay, the one thing I was curious about is, okay, supposedly the big advantage, I mean, you're talking about the traditional distribution model where they print out a bunch of copies, they put them in bookstores, and they wait for them to be sold. And that's just, you know, you have to get all these copies out to all these various locations and hope that, you know, your audience sees them. Where here, you know, you're selling directly to your audience. So I see how print-on-demand's more practical, but I guess I'm kind of curious as to what's the printing method used. I know about offset presses, but if you're printing on demand, are you still using offset presses? Is there a different method that's being used?
It uses what's called a web printer. It doesn't mean it's for the web. It's a different process to where basically it kind of creates the plate on the go.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And so what is that plate considerably cheaper to create?
It's like a template plate. Yeah, it's a temporary plate.
Is
that
it virtual?
What
is it, virtual or physical? Where are we talking here?
It's more of a virtual plate, but for the process of the big advantage of traditional presses is speed. You could put 5,000 of something on there and it will just run. You won't have problems like with digital printers, large digital printers that are the size of a building, pretty much. Yeah. Large diesel printers have problems because they break down more often. There's a lot more moving mechanisms versus a traditional printing press. Mm-hmm. And that's the advantage traditional printing presses have is you put a plate on there. The plate rolls, picks up the ink, rolls onto a sheet of paper, goes and does that like hundreds of times a minute.
There's less
mechanical failure versus a completely digital printer And the what web does is a web printer like bridges that gap where it has the sturdy mechanisms of a traditional press, but it has the ability to like have like virtual plates. And
okay.
So is this okay? So are you saying this web printer or whatever is different from what we commonly know as digital printing?
Yeah, exactly. Because a digital printing is like a DocuPress. A DocuPress or anything else by HP or Epson or any of those guys is something it's basically a blown up laser printer.
Okay, so is what you're talking about now more what CreateSpace and Lightning Source are actually doing now?
I know that Lulu uses a web printer. I know that the on-demand that Amazon uses a web printer. I know that Comic Express used a web printer. Most on-demand printers use a web printer because it makes sense. People who are lower in the totem pole use a digital printer, a large format digital printer. It's not really large format, but it's a large. The problem with those, and I've had to service these before, is like I said, they're as big as a room. It's basically a giant ass laser jet. Mm-hmm. And you have to put giant toner cylinders into it.
God, that's got to be fun.
And it also uses fuser oil. That is the biggest problem with those things. It uses fuser oil. And if you ever had a whole bunch of laser jet or inkjet prints that use fuser oil, you know, in a hot car, they stick together. While something that traditionally doesn't. You know, like I said, digital printing on those larger mm-hmm. digital machines aren't the same as a traditional press machine or a web press. That's the advantage web presses have.
All right. Now profit margins aside for now, what is actually going to give you the highest quality print?
The highest of highest is actually finding someone who will still burn plates for you.
Yes.
Are we talking about I'm talking about offset versus digital versus web now.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about traditional etching? Plates.
So offset.
Oh, that's yeah, offset. I used to do that. Like I used to do the plates. Now that I remember, back in the day, that was a bitch and a half. But yeah, you get some really great prints out of that.
The quality and the detail is second to none with that, because basically what you do is you basically burn the image like a photo negative version of mm-hmm. that image that you want for each color onto that plate. You wash in a solution that removes some of the metal that wasn't exposed.
Yeah. No, I've actually stuck my hand in that thing before. That was not fun.
Oh my God, I'm really sorry, Kitty Hawk. Is your hand okay?
Well, I had to, because it was like either
were you wearing the gloves at least?
No, I did not have the gloves on.
Jesus Christ,
Kitty Hawk.
I had to throw the solution all over my hand after I did that. No, it was just red for about a day.
Okay, so it wasn't in there for more than a couple seconds.
No, I am very quick when it comes to
chemical burns.
Well, I can stick my hand in boiling water and grab things. It's my mutant power.
So you have chef hands. So like I said, the whole thing is you take this metal plate, you put it on this giant roller that keeps on hitting this gelled ink. It's not really gelled, but the consistency is like gel. That's what printers have been using for hundreds of years. And like I said, the roller takes a sheet of paper. Hits, goes. It does this like hundreds of times a minute. Yep. And the mechanisms are built like out of cast, well, not really cast iron, but they're built out of heavy duty.
Well, sometimes they're cast iron.
So the older ones, if you can find an older one. Yeah.
Cause that's actually what we had. We had
those things, like I said, those things can run forever. Very few times you'll have a mechanical problem, and the mechanism is like built solidly, but simple enough that if it does break down, you could probably fix it yourself. Though that's the appeal of old fashioned.
Which is actually that's actually how, if I ever print a book, that's actually how I'm going to do it, because why do it any other way?
What are the costs of that? I mean, it's like, that sounds like you have to find a really custom job versus just finding an offset printer.
That's the point. But like
SGBY is going to get printed in the most high quality form that I can think of.
And Kitty Hawk will have all the metal plates hung up in her house.
Yes,
because they're beautiful to look at because they're like negative images of everything, and they're beautiful.
Oh man, I still have some of the plates. Like, it's great. They're just beautiful. I wanted to hang them up, but couldn't bring them to Australia. But anyway, getting back, I guess, to like the printing. Honestly, I don't like. I've seen print on demand books like right next to a so called professionally printed book. And I gotta say, nowadays it's getting harder and harder to tell the difference between the two.
That's true. But like I said, make sure they're using a web printer. Make sure they're not using a giant digital printer, because
you will have
that fuser oil problem. And fuser oil is a bitch in a hot car.
From the perspective of somebody using these services, they don't have to worry about that.
You actually do have to worry about that, because sometimes they skimp out and say, oh, this is just put through the digital printer.
Dude, nothing is worse than getting your books and finding like that they've been like got smudgies.
Yeah, then you send them
printed correctly.
Then you report it and you get replacements.
Yeah, and the thing is that I think our point is that at this point there's really no reason to go traditional if you're printing paperback.
If you're going to cons, you want physical if you're going to be going to cons, and that's where a lot of people go.
Yeah, but that's why you only make like 24. Like when I went to the last strip con, I got like 24 copies of Hero Academy printed out, and I just carried them with me, and I gave away like most of them. I still have like only three left, but I gave away most of them.
And I gave them out specifically
just to promote the brand.
Somebody like Brad who has like lots of followers is like he's going to be like making a whole bunch of these and he's going to be selling them right away. The point is to him, all the DIY costs of doing this are worth it to him. Maybe he likes packaging things.
Does he actually print it himself, or is he actually having someone else print it for him?
He's likely not going to like directly himself printing it. But then
that makes no sense.
No, Kitty, calm down. No, I'm saying this is what you do. If you want a lot of physical books, especially if you have the people that are going to be buying it, especially like this, kind of like a pre-order, you send it off, you get them printed, you get all the books shipped to you, and then you take a weekend or whatever, and you put all the things together. That's DIY. You putting things together and you mailing it out. To him, that's worth it to him. That's fine.
That is a load of shit.
I would totally
extra work up the wall.
I would do that.
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say this. If you enjoy... like doing the work, if you enjoy having your living room full of books, if you enjoy waiting months to make all the profits that you were expecting, then yeah, I'd say print the books through a traditional manner. I mean, if you're willing to wait a few months to make back the profits, if you're willing to have
a recliner made out of unsold copies of your books sitting in your living room.
Yeah. And the thing is that that's why I'm saying like the print on demand makes more sense. Because honestly, I don't have fucking $5,000 to put up front for a run of books.
That's because you didn't do a Kickstarter.
I don't feel right taking $5,000 for a run of books when honestly what I could turn around and do is just do a print on demand book and take your $5,000.
But you won't make as much money.
How big is the size of his audience though? I mean, how many people bought the previous copies of the books?
But the other thing is...
You can probably chart what his likely sales are just from the sales of the previous copy. From an investment standpoint, it might be a good idea. I don't know the numbers.
Honestly, if you're going to start out, I would honestly say go with print on demand if you're really planning on doing a book, like you're actually starting out, because then you can judge what your reach is and such like that. So you're not investing in a run and then you're looking at them every time you're eating your cereal.
Okay. Yeah. Starting out. Doing printing on demand, that sounds fact.
Absolutely.
I'm not a big fan of Family Guy, but there's a really good example of this. Hang on.
What was that, Monty?
Oh, it's just... when you're starting out, print on demand makes far more sense because then you figure out just how big the size of your market is, and you don't have to come up with all these upfront expenses. You don't have to have the space. But I mean, in the case of Brad Geiger, he knows the size of his market. He probably lives in his own house. He's probably done these shippings before. And so for him, probably doing it, you know, if he is doing it, I'm not exactly sure how he's executing the print.
Well, he's much older. He's been in the biz for a while. I'm sure he has a middle-class lifestyle. He's not like the average webcomic artist who's lower middle class or lower class. You know, and so, you know, I would say that chasing the waterfall of the print book is a little silly. I'm going to go ahead and say it is very silly.
I mean, he is also making PDFs, and he's going to be selling PDFs.
The best illustration.
And also, this is sort of double dip. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say this. This is sort of double dipping, because it's like, you guys revealed that it's a subscription service for webcomics.com, so he's going to charge for the content, and then he's going to charge for the content?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Some people didn't, but I never signed up for webcomics.com. I didn't believe in paying for that, because you can find all the information that pops up there somewhere else free online. Well, we do this on the Webcomic Beacon. We share free information.
Back to what I said, which is that he's old and he doesn't understand that we now have other sites. And
but really, the best way to illustrate the downfall of buying a run of books traditionally. Before you sell them, you know, the model of not printing on demand. I have one book title in mind. I think Kitty Hawk will get this. Faster Than the Speed of Love.
I love that one.
If you want to get a run of books before you sell them and build little forts in your living room while you wait for people to buy them, then go ahead, do it.
Okay, but you know what? What's the most hilarious thing? When you see someone do a Kickstarter for a book and they use the book that they did for their previous Kickstarter to give away as an extra for the new Kickstarter. It's like, hey, take these books that I couldn't get rid of so that you can buy this new book that I'm not going to be able to get rid of, which I'm going to have to use for the next book that I can't get rid of.
That's not necessarily true. I know what you're talking about.
Kickstarters, and it says, here's my previous book as one of the extras. And then you've got to ask yourself the question, how many of these things do you have if you're giving this away as one of the goals?
You're kind of missing the point a bit. Here's the biggest part where I understand absolutely what you're saying, and yes, that's fine and good, but if you have people that are clearly going to back and help you fund this and type really hard on a typewriter while I'm talking,
sorry,
if people are going to buy it, let them do that. Seriously.
I'm not saying don't buy it. I'm just pointing out, like, there's no, it's like, that's like saying, you know, people, I don't know, they believe in skin whitening cream, and yeah, it's fine for them to go buy the skin whitening cream, but is it really working? Is it really necessary? The thing is that I can criticize something. People can like things, and I can still criticize them.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if the market's there and the market is behaving enough,
But the market isn't there.
It's backed. It's at 18,500. He's going to do it. No, it's fine. He's making
money.
What
I'm talking about is not that his particular case. I'm talking about the whole picture involving print. It's obvious that we're in the twilight years of print. And my point is why engage in this in the
because
twilight years?
Because you can make money doing it.
Yeah, there you go. Because there's still money to be had. Also, I like print stuff. I mean, I started doing...
No, that's fine. Find the like print stuff. I'm not saying don't like print stuff. I'm just saying you can get in on this. But the thing is that we are actually looking at the successful stories right now. And that's the thing I'm also trying to point out. Is that there are some successful book stories on Kickstarter, but there are a lot of them that don't actually make their goal. And the thing is that I'm pointing out, don't chase this. There are other avenues to make money. You may not make the $18,000 up front, but I think it's better than trying to put the money up front and just try to make the money over time.
You
seems
have a good point.
More sensible.
That is certainly a good point. Do not put all your eggs into this basket. I think what you're trying to say, or at least try to get through to me anyway.
Yeah, well, and so I guess that what my point is like there are some people making money off of this, but I have a feeling that this is like a blip before people are like, why am I buying books? I guess like maybe they'll need to step up their game.
Well, look at the bright side. Maybe he can ship the books packed in shredded up copies of his book.
Monty?
Oh, well, basically what you're saying is just that, I mean, you're distributing books this way, it's pretty much in its twilight years, and obviously, as you've kept saying, it's just not practical for most people, and this is not something they should chase. I mean, maybe somebody like Geiger with an established market who knows how much he can sell, this is practical, but if you want to do a print one, otherwise you should be doing print on demand.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And you actually I know that y'all keep mentioning conventions, but honestly, you reach more people on the internet. Seriously. Like, the only reason that I have fans all over the world is because of the internet. And I guess my point is that, yes, conventions do get you some readers and things like that, but the number of people that you're going to meet at a convention, it pales in comparison to the number of people that you probably have reading your stuff online, what I'm trying to say.
But also meeting people in person is a very different experience.
Oh, no, I love that. I love going to I'm not...
There's pros and cons. There's pros and cons to everything here, and I think that's something that people got to figure out for themselves.
And there's also the impulse buy.
Yeah, there's that, too.
Oh, yeah. And there definitely is that.
The biggest goal, I think, if you're going to show at a convention is to at least make enough to pay for going. And I think for a lot of people, if that's at least worth it enough, or at least comping some of it. It's such a... The markets, it's all changing and fluctuating right now. Of what works.
I would say about conventions, like, honestly, I found that you make a lot more money doing more personalized things at conventions sketches actually make a lot more money. And the thing is that try to, like, I did the whole merchandise bomb stuff for a while, but I actually found over time that the amount of effort and the amount of money that I actually put into all that merchandise, and merchandise is fun, don't get me wrong. I love making some merchandise and I love having it on the table. But the big bucks honestly really come from doing like sketches, illustrations.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. Because people are honestly, when they're going to a convention, there is the thing about the impulse buy, and they really love getting like their character drawn or the favorite character drawn. And I'm like, art.
And it's part of the wish fulfillment. It's because like I said, I always go to conventions and always that starts to draw some of my favorite characters, and they always do. And that's the thing. I imagine Kitty Hawk has drawn many Power Girls in her day.
I have gone to some conventions and I have drawn some amazing fetish material because, you know, it was something that someone was waiting for. And the thing is that, and like, that doesn't take as much investment. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say to like young webcomic artists is like the whole, don't try to be big so quick. Don't try to do the large runs of books. Don't try to like kill yourself. Try, you know, just
yes. Don't try to kill yourself.
We have services now. It's not like when I started, which was, you put your thing on a website and
you were too good for Cafe Press.
Oh yeah, Cafe Press, who took my money and closed my account because I committed copyright infringement against myself.
You're too good to be Kitty Hawk, Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, they said, this art is too good. This is not yours. We're closing your account. We're taking your money. And I was like, well, that's the biggest compliment I ever got.
Oh, ouch.
All right.
It wasn't a lot of money, so, yeah. Whatever.
We have, this has actually been a really good episode. Lot of information. I was worried that because we didn't have a whole lot of stuff. This is what I'm liking about sort of the new format of the Webcomic Beacon. Staying topical and still bringing up stuff, really, really good perspectives and such. I was wondering if this also might be a bad time to add that I've actually been adding like crowdfunding picks to the website lately.
No, I have actually, like, my only issue is that I only have a problem with books. I really only have a problem.
They're mostly books. I'm mostly doing comics at this point. Okay. Again, because well, if they're
doing something cool, are they doing like hardbounds?
Well, see, it's just me, so I'm picking. It doesn't matter if it's hardbounds. If the comic or the project looks interesting, I was going to pick it. And anybody on the crew can pick stuff as well. It's just something I thought I'd try to give it a shot. And honestly, if you want to have an actual physical comic, a Kickstarter is a great way to get in early and usually at a really great price for getting a physical comic if you want it. If you don't want a physical comic, just you can throw in $5 and get the PDF, whatever, you know.
Which is really nice. I actually like the PDF stuff. Like it is nice to have a CDR. Nice. Well, I'm actually doing CBRs. We're actually setting up that service soon. because seriously, everyone uses CBRs at this point.
So, like,
okay,
if you
now we were talking about the web, we were talking about Geiger's site and the information that's posted on it, and I mean, we obviously know he has a paywall, but you're talking about other sources where you can find that information for free elsewhere.
Yeah.
What would those sources happen to be? Because that would probably be of interest to quite a few people listening to the show.
Just
there's several on YouTube.
Googling,
like if you go ahead.
Yeah, Googling for one. Also, lots of past episodes of the Webcomic Beacon. We share lots of information about the, about. I'm, it's
Webcomic
true.
Beacon.
But it's true though. I mean, it's like
no.
You know, it's you can find a lot of this information. Some you know, sometimes it's individual web cartoonists' websites. Jenny Breeden had a con survivor, had a whole like thing about picking a con and how to basically do cons. It's like that's all free information, you know, that you just
kind of like a table of links to this stuff.
Well, like
try and Google. It's just, I mean,
if you don't want to spend the time. Buy his book. That's the thing. You just got to go out and do the footwork yourself if you want to find free stuff.
Lazy and not really interested. So let me get this straight. If you're lazy and not really interested in beyond what you can reach ahead of you, so to the point where you're not really suited to do web comics, you should buy the book if you want to do web comics. That's a logical.
No. I'm saying you can find this information. Just spend some time doing some searches. I've done that plenty of times looking for stuff. How do I do this?
Like, honestly, about like Manga Studio or like Photoshop, there's something I didn't understand. All I have to type in is Manga Studio and then whatever I'm trying to do. I understand that people get frustrated when the first Google search doesn't come up with what they want. But that's what you change. You change your wording. That's how you do it. And like, I understand that like, it is daunting to start. Like I said, I tried to do some amigurumis and I just threw it down and said, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
And like I said, I understand that attitude. And that's why like, not everybody out there has a webcomic because it is work. It's like anything. It's like when people tell my husband like, oh, well, you can just like put some words on the screen and it's a program, right? No, it's not like that. He has to sit for hours reading books, reading manuals, learning. Just that he learns new languages for new projects because he has to. And like,
it's like this. Let's say I want to learn how to do a Dorodongo, and Dorodongo is not for someone who's impatient.
Yeah,
I mean. Dorodongo is lots of meticulous, long, hard work that you won't see a result for hours. I mean, have you ever done a Dorodongo before?
No, I don't even know what that is. It's a programming language, right?
No, Kitty Hawk, you should know what Dorodongo is.
Dorodongo, what is that?
It is a Japanese form of art where you take some dirt. And you form it into a shiny ball.
Oh, I've seen that on Mythbusters.
Okay, and then you make the Netscapes out of it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay, yeah, I know that. Yeah, they make the little clay. They look like clay, but they're not really clay.
It's just dirt.
Yeah, dirt and water is basically all the ingredients to it. And just
clay actually contains other stuff like kaolin and other materials.
But yeah, there's some Dorodongos right there. Those are not marble. Those are just dirt.
Yeah.
And so the thing, like, yeah, so with everything, there is going to be some work. And I wish I had some links, but I can tell you this. If you go to DeviantArt or you go to Google or YouTube, you can actually search for pretty much any tutorial.
Yeah.
There are tutorials on pretty much every program out there. There are tutorials on mm-hmm. To print your and bind your own books. There's even that sort of information.
There's even tutorials on how to make your own Dorodongo.
Yeah, yes. And there's even character creation tutorials. So right. If you're terrible at making characters, like you can't figure out hair and stuff, there's a lot out there. When people tell me I can't find the information, I just say you're not looking hard enough.
Yeah. It's right. There's no reason for most cases, I'd say there's very little reason to actually buy a physical dummies book. Though it might be really helpful if it's a very technical thing and it's very
but you can find
a lot of this stuff for free online if you just spend the time searching for it.
But you can't command F a book, and that's my biggest issue about a guidebook, is that I can't search for the term I want in that book. That's why PDFs are better.
Right.
But I wanted to mention about, do we have time for anything else?
Very little time. I'll say we have 5 to 10 minutes maximum.
Okay. I just wanted to mention about Prism, just because this actually does relate to webcomics, in that I have actually read some of the bills that are related to it. If you don't know what Prism is already, Prism is basically the NSA spying program, which basically monitors telephone calls, internet communications, and such like that, with the aid of corporations such as Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, Apple, to name a few. There are more. So basically, if you've heard of bills such as CISPA or SOPA or ACTA, you're probably aware of these because there were a lot of campaigns online to stop these several times. Now, the reason that I bring this up and why this is related to webcomics is, in these bills, oftentimes there's a lot of mention of copyright and obscenity. And then the relation to copyright, basically they mention in these bills that copyright infringement is a form of terrorism. But the way that they word it, it's like really weird, because basically you could just like have like a nod to a character and that could be construed as economic terrorism. So there's an issue with copyright in there. There's also some talk in a lot of the bills of having a copyright registry system, but the way it sounds pretty like
archaic,
hard to get into. But the main issue that I'm getting to is, in a lot of these bills, they mention obscenity. And obscenity under the U.S. law is very vague. It can mean
it's whatever
like,
offends the judge.
Yeah, basically it can mean incendiary speech. It could even mean nudity. But they talk about the distribution of obscenity. And the thing that scares me about this is that this basically, if this passed with this wording in it, because some of the bills have this wording in it and some of them don't, is that basically overnight, a bunch of webcomics could become illegal. And my issue is that webcomic artists need to get... need to start reading up on this stuff, because I moved my server last year. Now, I've moved to Australia since, but I moved my server out first because I was aware of such bills being, and I also was sort of aware of the program itself. It's just
she moved it to the land of the ice and snow.
Yes, Iceland, which, by the way, has laws protecting your stuff on servers, which means they cannot touch your stuff for any reason. Unless there's like,
should have thought of that.
Yeah. They actually have, I think they actually have to pass something in order to get into your server. So it's incredibly hard.
Didn't Kim.com move his new site to Iceland as well? Or am I?
There was talk of it. I know that WikiLeaks runs out of Iceland as well. And so my thing here is that I'm just saying to webcomic artists that you need to keep up on all of this security and copyright information, because I have a bad feeling that this is going to get worse, and that if they actually do manage to pass one of these laws, it could mean a lot of trouble for webcomic artists. And also another thing you might want to be thinking about is a lot of the services you use are part of the Prism program. So keep in mind that you are actually, the government is actually reading everything you're doing, and they are actively working towards making your stuff illegal. So you might want to move your stuff out of the country. I'm just warning people now.
Invest in Iceland.
Yeah, Iceland is actually a very friendly place. But here's the thing:
they have some great they have some great food there. They have eat puffin and rotten shark.
Yep.
Yay.
But the thing is, I'm going to say about this is it is hard moving your server out. Talking about work, you will need a passport. You will need to probably translate a few documents. It's not an easy process, but it is the peace of mind knowing that no one can get into your server and no one can seize your server. Now, this is the big part because the government has been seizing servers. And so far, it's been mostly like political and so-called copyright infringers. But I'm just pointing out that like .coms aren't very safe as far as like you can get those seized. So you might want to move your domain and at the very least move your server. But if you're okay with like the government spying on you and you're okay with like them actively trying to end your business, then stay in the United States. That's my rant. I'm saying this because I'm just warning people that
if you got links, stuff at foot. Kitty, if you got links, I would really appreciate some links. I mean, you just have text in the notes.
Yeah.
Well, and then I'll have some links too. In Iceland, what they use to catch the puffins is a giant net called a howl. And actually quite fun. They sit like on top of a cliff and they wait for puffins to fly over and they just like swing this giant net and catch them, and then they eat them.
Give me some links and we'll get the links in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll find some links. And the thing is that I'm just saying, just, you know, keep aware that they are doing some weird things with copyright. They are doing some weird things with your information. And if anyone wants to ask me about the process, they can always email me. Let me find these.
Check the interwebs.
Or you could do a write-up and we could post your article on the website too.
Okay, yeah. Let's see here. I'll give the Wikipedia article for CISPA.
That's pretty much it for this episode. I mean, we can quickly mention that it seems like every web cartoonist is playing Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing!
So yes, they are. I was just talking to Ian Sampson, and he said that he friended you, Kitty Hawk, on Animal Crossing.
Oh, yeah. Anyone who wants to friend me on Animal Crossing, my email is kittyhawk@sgvy.com, and my 3DS code is 34802554991. I have all the fruits.
I have to get a job before I can buy a 3DS in Animal Crossing.
So did you actually really quit your job, Fess?
We can talk more after the end of the show, but I'm going to end the show. Once again,
and then his life.
And then once again, we've had Ben Carver.
Thank you.
Monty Road.
Yep.
And Kitty Hawk.
Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki. SGDY.com. Sexy fun.
We tripped you up there. I've been Fess.
Damn it.
We'll see you next time on Webcomic Beacon.